Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm so excited for today's guest, especially because we've literally had to stop having a chin wag before because the conversation is so good that I want to save it. I'm joined by the amazing Sonali Shah. She is a freelance broadcaster known for being one of the faces of BBC's Escape to the Country, Crime Watch, National Lottery. She is a radio host on Magic, which Tommy will be very jealous I'm talking to you because he is a big Magic fan. And away from the camera, Sonali is an ambassador for the Prince's Trust, the British Asian Trust, and regularly supports Barnardo's. And you are also a mum to Ariana, who I believe is aged 8, and son Rafi, aged 5.
That's right.
I love the name Rafi, can I just say?
Oh, thank you so much. It was so hard to find a boy's name that kind of hinted to our Asian heritage, but also kind of went with the surname. And yeah, honestly, we really struggled. But as soon as we picked it, and we picked both names very early on in the pregnancies.
That's interesting. See, I mean, Ariana's lovely as well. I've just never heard Rafi, but it's amazing.
I know quite a few people who've lent me the name. They have sons called Rafi. And I asked them, I was like, do you mind if I borrow it? It's quite a Middle Eastern name, quite a Pakistani name. So it's sort of heavy in those communities. So yeah.
Interesting that you said that you picked names early on in the pregnancy, because we did as well, whereas my sister still, like, they really didn't know what they were going to call theirs. And I always find that, I mean, I was just so impatient with the whole process.
I hate surprises. So I found out the sex of both babies really early on. Ariana at 20 weeks, because in 2013, when I was pregnant, that was the only way. And then with Rafi, we did a private blood test at 12 weeks. It was really, really early on. I mean, and for me, I need to know, I'm a total control freak. I need to know what I'm doing, what I'm having. I don't want the surprise when I'm in the middle of labor. I just don't like surprise. And it's actually a surprise whenever you find out in many ways. But I just wanted to start visualizing the baby and kind of setting up, you know, clothes and just kind of imagining my life. I like that. I like the lead up. I hate surprise parties because I hate missing out on the lead up to the event.
I am exactly the same as you. We paid to get the Harmony test done. I think you can do a blood test, is it from 10 weeks, and you can find out not only the sex of the baby, but also just to have that reassurance of knowing that it's healthy. And that,
yeah, I was over 35 with the second one. So I think that age factor meant, and by that time the Harmony test had come in, it wasn't there in 2013. So yeah, I just felt like I've got the option and it gives me the joy of knowing what I'm having, which didn't really matter actually to me, but it was nice to know either way.
My sister did not find out the sex of her baby. And I was like, can you do the Harmony test and I'll look at the results and not tell you? And
she was like, I tell all my friends. I was like, but can I know? Even yeah. You don't know, and they just think I'm weird.
I know, I'm exactly the same as you.
In you.
So impatient. And that's what I found really hard actually in my pregnancy about the due date, because my due date was on the 3rd of January, but Alfie was born on the 9th of January. And so even though I know that due dates are just guesswork if you're giving birth vaginally.
Well, it's to do with your cycle, isn't it? It's to do, this is the daughter of a midwife coming through. It's to do with how long your cycle is. Like the 40 weeks is only ever an estimate because they base it on an average.
And in France, I think it's 41 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just an estimate. But if you've got a shorter cycle, in all likelihood, you'll, you know, have the baby slightly early. But it just depends on how the pregnancy is going as well.
As a control freak, that I did find that really hard. Oh, it felt like the period between Christmas and New Year where you don't quite know what day it is and you feel like you can't quite get on with things.
I know. I'm the type of person that would have suited something elective, except as a daughter of a midwife, to elect for cesarean probably wasn't going to be... and there's no judgment on other people, but honestly, like, you know, I had a midwife mum and I just think it was just not an option for us, and she just would have gone, why?
See, this is really interesting to me because, you know, we were chatting very briefly just before we hit record and I was like, don't save this for the podcast, save this for the podcast. You've mentioned that having a mum for a midwife is basically has shaped you as a mum. So I'd love to know a little bit more about that.
It's completely shaped me as a mum, a 1970s midwife. And it's just the type of mum she was. I always knew I'll end up being that type of mum. And she, you know, I didn't do NCT because my mum said, you don't need to do NCT. You have me. That's just for people who need friends of the same age, or, you know, that's just for people who have, you know, babies of the same age. It's for people who need that company, but you've kind of got me for all the advice. So I didn't even do NCT because I had someone, and I was in a really lucky position and still am, that I just had this effectively private midwife who happened to also be my mum, who happened to retire just before my firstborn was born. And so she just has been there throughout. She was at the birth and she's just been amazing in terms of advice. I mean, she's a straight shooter, as am I. So she's not for everyone, and I'm not for everyone. I'm very well aware I'm a little bit Marmite because I am very much a straight shooter in what I say to people. But I like that about people, and I appreciate that from my mum. I don't always want to hear what she has to say, but we have that type of relationship where actually we can have a little bicker and get over it really, really quickly. And we tell each other the truth. And she was brilliant at the birth. And then after that, she just set it up. She just said, this is how you need to be. You can be a mum 7 to 7. But if you start getting involved at night, they will rely on you at night and you will not be able to be a working mum. And she just never saw it as an option not to be a working mum. You know, I've overheard her having conversations with other people who are thinking about giving up work. And actually, that's, you know, for some people, that's really important and they want to be a stay-at-home mom. But my mom just sort of says, why? You know, and that's why she's not for everyone, because she's opinionated about how things should be. But for me, she knew I needed to work in order to be a better mom. There was no way that was going. In fact, I delayed having kids because, you know, work was so important to me. And also, I knew that I would go back to work and have to travel. And I needed them in routine so that other people found them easy to look after. My parents and my in-laws, so all four grandparents, are really, really heavily involved. I've never had a nanny because I have these four grandparents who are so heavily involved and look after them. And they've had three bedrooms all their lives and, you know, three sets of parents. And that's enabled me to go out and work without guilt. Of course, there's been guilt, but they're with family. So the guilt is really how much I sort of rely on the grandmothers. That's where the guilt is, rather than for the kids.
See, that's amazing. I'm already so jealous that you have both sets of grandparents nearby. I have one, which, I mean, I don't know what I would do without Tommy's parents nearby, but I wish my parents moved closer. But obviously, that's quite a selfish ask for them to come.
We moved closer to the parents. And it was my mum always saying that. My job moved to Manchester just before I was thinking about having kids. So I just turned 30 and I knew I was about to lose my job. And I knew I couldn't move to Manchester because my family and my in-laws are in London. And I knew I had to think about whether I wanted a family or not. And I thought, if I want a family, in order to stay working, I have to stay near them. And I lived in zone 2 in London. And my mum said to me, she was, you know, as I say, straight shoot. She just said, I'm not coming over there to look after your kids. If you want any help, you move towards me. So I moved back out to zone 5 because both my parents and my in-laws are in zone 5 in London, which is quite a London thing to say, I'm aware, but it's kind of this big thing to sort of, you know, move out of where you love and everything. But I knew I had to sort of do that in order to have the hands-on help. And so I sort of, you know, had this crisis of losing my job and going freelance just before I was having a kid. So I knew I'd have no maternity, but I knew that I had family around me to help. And I knew I needed that. I just would not have been able to have these babies if I didn't. And I really admire people who can do it without.
There's a few things that I almost want to like rewind on. Firstly, it's interesting to me listening to you talk because, you know, we both are self-confessed control freaks and we're like, we don't like being told what to do. But I can tell the way that you talk about your mum, you just have so much respect for her. And she sounds very like a headstrong mum, like a very strong woman. And it seems like you kind of go with the flow with her. Is that fair to say? Because I feel like if my mum was, well, regardless of her profession, but I feel like if my mum was like, you should do this or you need to do this, my like instinct is to rebel immediately. Whereas you, I can tell from what you're saying that you have a lot of trust and faith in your mum.
I actually don't mind advice, but I love it more when it comes from a place of science. So I'm very trusting of professions. So the fact that my mum is a midwife has probably changed that dynamic. If she hadn't been the midwife, I'm not sure I would have taken that advice. You know, it's harder, isn't it? Because it's their own experience. As you say, people give you advice left, right and center. And I'm probably guilty of it as well with some of my friends who had kids later saying, this is what I learned. This is what I learned. I don't know what you want to take from it, but I really wish I'd known this, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the fact that she was coming from a place where she had delivered hundreds of babies herself, she'd raised two kids herself. She knew what she was talking about in her own experience. It might not have worked for me, but at least it was coming from a place of not only being my mum, but also being a professional. And, you know, the same, my father-in-law's a GP and he came to my house like every day for the first 6 weeks just to check I didn't have postnatal depression. My dad's a pharmacist. So he would, you know, I think I was surrounded by so many medical people that I trusted all of that advice because it came from a place of science. Whereas I think the aunties who give out this and that and whatnot, I probably just let that flow over me a bit more because I kind of feel like that's coming from a good place, but it's not always going to be relevant to me. And I think a lot of people thought, and still do, that I was too strict with my kids. I'm too strict with them. I never let them out after seven. They had to be in bed by seven. It was a real control freak thing. And a lot of people didn't get that. They just said, why are you so uptight? Why don't you let them stay up? Why don't you do this? But I knew that, yes, some babies are so flexible, but my kids are just not because of maybe the way I've raised them, but they're great for life. Like they'll go to bed at 7:30 and wake up at 7:30. And that's helped me be a working mum. They're really hard on holiday. They're really hard to take on holiday because they can't stay up late and they can't share a room with me and all of that. But I'd rather them be better for life. And I've sort of trained them with the help of my mum to be that way.
See, this is a fascinating topic of conversation for me. And then another reason why I absolutely love doing this podcast, because it's a really good way to get insight into people who do it differently. And as soon as you said, you know, I'm a 7-to-7 parent, and that was like really important to me from the beginning as a working mum. I am obviously also a working mum, and I am a 24 hours round the clock. My child doesn't sleep. We co-sleep. Like he basically uses my boob as a dummy. We're obviously coming up to a year now. I won't lie, it's tough. And there are moments where I think, should I have been much stricter in a routine? But equally, I find routine quite a stressful thing. I always have. Like before having Alf, I was, you know, I'd book a holiday with a day or two notice. Obviously, things like that I appreciate can't happen anymore. But I get very stressed when I have to try and stick to a routine. So it's really interesting for me to hear you say, you know, I'm doing this to help them be better. Because in my head and in my, I suppose, what I've read about the science of parenting, I can't imagine, like, I mean, how does it work 7-to-7? And how did it work when they were babies? Obviously, this is a non-judgmental podcast. I'm just fascinated because it's basically the total opposite to what I'm doing. And I'm obviously at times at my wit's end with being up through the night.
Yeah, but that's what's so hard about it all. And it doesn't work with all babies. So I had an absolute nightmare with Ariana after she was born. She just wouldn't latch. And I really wanted to breastfeed. That was a big thing for me because I knew it would sort of be easier really without the paraphernalia of bottles. So it was more about just, I want to make my life as simple and as easy as possible. And I knew about if I can breastfeed, there is so much goodness in my milk that I could pass on to her. That also there was a, she was an, you know, autumn baby. So I sort of thought the winter would be easier. So the scientist in my head kind of thought, if I can breastfeed, I really wanted to do it. And my mum was very much like, try and do 6 months. But after that, that's more about you and bonding. And she'd say that to me. She'd say that after that, it's more of a personal thing about whether you can cope about giving up your body longer than that. But try and do till 6 months. And I had an absolute nightmare. The first 3 weeks of her life were probably the hardest 3 weeks of my life because she just wouldn't latch. We were sort of, I was pumping. I had different breastfeeding specialists coming over to my house. I had my mum's midwife friends kind of coming over. My boob was like, you know, everyone had handled it. I was all over the place hormonally. And had I not had the support of my mum and her friends, who I trusted implicitly as 1970s midwives, I, of course, would have just gone to the bottle. And that would have been fine in that scenario. I can completely understand why it doesn't work for people. But honestly, what I've learned is with the right support, I actually think more people would end up breastfeeding and then save money and probably, you know, give their kids a little bit of immunity. But I just think you've got to do what works for you in that moment and that time. And I was determined that I'm going to do everything I can to try and breastfeed. And then if I can't, I'm not going to feel guilty about it. And then 3 weeks in, you know, we checked she wasn't tongue-tied. Suddenly something switched. 3 weeks. And then she became a three-hourly baby. And it's like, she would just only feed every 3 hours. She just suddenly became this baby that's what happened. And then at 6 months, I knew I had to stop. I had to start going away again. I had to start filming again. And I have October babies and I don't sort of film till the spring. And so that's why I knew that 6 month thing would work.
Interestingly, I have been, especially a couple of weeks ago when I first got back from holiday, I thought, right, that's it. I need my independence back. I miss DJing. I want to be able to go back to, you know, traveling around the country DJing. And I actually spoke to an amazing breastfeeding consultant called Stacey Zimmels. She's called Feed Eat Speak on Instagram. And I was like, this is the stage I'm at. I need to sleep. I've been told that if I give Alf formula at night, he'll sleep better. And she was just brilliant because she said to me, look, ultimately, happy mom, happy baby. No,
absolutely.
No one disputes that. So she was like, if formula is right for you, let's get, like, I will work with you to make this happen. But she said, there's so many myths. And obviously everybody, like you were saying earlier, everybody wants to give their experience of what worked for them. And they almost pass things off that work for them as fact. So I was told, if you give formula, they will sleep better at night. And Stacey was like,
yeah, so many people said that to me. In fact, early on when Ariana wasn't feeding, the automatic reaction from someone is, give her formula because she's going to be hungry and she'll lose weight. And then my mum said, she was standing next to me, heard the health visitor say that. The health visitor walked out the house and she goes, that's just not right. If you are determined to breastfeed and you want to do that, then you just continue and she will not starve. And I know, she goes, I have faith your baby will not starve. But had I not had my mom standing there, of course I would have listened to the health visitor and just formula fed.
Yeah, well, Stacey said to me, at the age that Alf is now, there's like, it wouldn't make a difference. So she was
like, he'll go to cow's milk soon, if and when you want that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And she just said, it's very easy to confuse sleep and feeding and to almost tie the two in together. And she was like, but actually they're separate points. If you want to stop feeding, yes, we can work towards doing that. But if you just want to sleep better, then that's something different. And I'm probably, I mean, you know, we're going on to a topic of control crying. I'm like much more like holistic. I find control crying like quite a fascinating other end of the spectrum.
Well, people find it horrific because
mindset.
I mean, it's a horrible term. And I think most people just think, I just can't do that. And actually for me, it was more, I knew they sort of were just getting up for comfort, not for the food. I could tell that, especially with the second baby, because I had a full, he'd get up at 2, but then he wouldn't take a full feed at 7. And I sat there analyzing with my mom. I was like, well, he's not taking a full feed at 7. She goes, well, when you're ready, it probably, and she said it, she always said, when you're ready, because I think it is about you as well. She just said, it's probably because he doesn't need to get up at 2, but it's becoming a habit. But also, that's not a bad, you know, you guys can do that.
My question is, what's wrong with comfort? Because that is what
exactly,
people say. They just
exactly.
want comfort. And I'm like,
but I was
okay.
Starting to go delirious. I couldn't do, like, it was my second child. I could no longer get up at 2. I was going delirious. And I just, it just was getting too much for me. And I was really weeping and I was struggling. And she could see that. And I thought, is there a way I could sort that out? And she goes, well, why don't you try it? And if it doesn't work, go back to the comfort. She just said to me, why don't you try not going to him tonight? And if you can't stand it, just go to him. And I tried it because she knows also what the type of character I am, that I probably could have handled it. Most of my friends wouldn't have been able to. And he was whimpering. Most parents wouldn't handle that. I'm a bit of a badass. I'm all right. I was like, I know he's just whimpering if he really wanted. And then at 7, he took a full breath. And I thought, you know what? He's okay. The next night he tried it again because kids are clever. But he gave up. It's like he knew I was determined. And this was at about 5 months, I think. And he just gave up. He just was like, I'm not getting up. And then it was like me trying to stop breastfeeding. But it was actually him that dictated it, because I wanted to go to 6 months. And he just kept looking at my boob like going, why do you keep shoving your boob in my face? I don't want it. And it was like my son was telling me he wanted to stop breastfeeding. It was really bizarre because I don't think I was quite ready. And in the end, I got mastitis because of it. And I didn't have that with my first, because he decided rather than me. And it was like trying to decide what was right. But you're right. Like, what's wrong with comfort? And it's okay if they're using you as a dummy, because if you can cope with that, that's okay, because that's such a lovely bond.
So basically, you said that you wanted to breastfeed for 6 months, but you also knew that you had to go back to work. And I think this is a really, I mean, it's a big thing.
I'm very functional. Like, I will never go for a massage for the relaxation. I'll go for a massage if I've got backache. I treated breastfeeding the same. It was never emotional for me. I know a lot of people feel it's bonding. I had no issue bonding with my child. For me, I felt like a cow, and it was very, very functional. I knew I was only breastfeeding because I wanted to do that for the baby, but it was nothing to do with me. I did not enjoy it. It wasn't something that felt special or any. I didn't hate it. It, you know, felt very natural and all of that. And, you know, I wasn't. It's just, it was very functional, because that's how I am as a character. I'm very.
So how
very
did you stop with Ariana? You said with Rafi, he just decided to stop. But did you, especially that Ariana was your first, did you feel like, oh my goodness, I'm going back to work and I need to stop? Or
no, I'd introduced the bottle quite early on. I mean, it was hard. She went on a bottle strike at 8 weeks. I'd started pumping 10, 11 p.m. every night. I'd hired one of those hospital grade Medela pumps, which my doctor friend had said, hire one of those. It's the best thing you'll ever do. So at 10 o'clock at night, I used to pump every night so that my husband could do that feed, so he could have a bit of time with her. I could get a break. And so we'd introduce the bottle really early on. I mean, with my son, it was a completely different experience. He was an on-demand feeder. I had so many comments about why I was on-demand feeding when they had seen my first baby had been this model three-hourly textbook baby after 3 weeks. And my son was not that at all. He latched the moment he came out, and we had a horrific kind of emergency C-section situation. He latched immediately, so totally different, but was so demanding. He wanted a feed every hour, every half hour sometimes. For 5 months, he was just attached to me. And I found that exhausting with a three-year-old already, absolutely exhausting. So it was really different with Ariana, because she was already used to the bottle. It was kind of a really easy transition. I didn't get mastitis. I just took one feed off at a time. Also, 6 months, she'd started eating. So that really helped. I think it was a good time because the food was playing a part, so she needed less milk anyway. And kind of, it all worked out well. Whereas with my son, it's like that was a bit tougher, and I got mastitis. And I think that was really, really hard. I suddenly understood why people used to say giving up and planning how you give up is quite hard. I didn't quite realize that until my second, because he was a deaf, different feeder. He was very underweight as a newborn. And I think he was feeding. And I was aware he was very underweight because he hadn't developed in the last 3 weeks. And I therefore wanted to, you know, how could I not feed him on demand? And so some of the comments of people going, why are you feeding him? Why don't you put him down? Because you need to, you're spoiling him. And, you know, the midwives will tell you, you can't spoil a baby in the first 3 months. I have no issue. I really believe in the fourth trimester, really believe in that. I really believe you cannot spoil a baby in the first 3 months, probably even later, but it depends on your thinking and situation of what spoiling is. And I will feed on demand. If a baby asks for milk, I will feed. I will feed. There's, you know, my kids are the same today. They eat all day nonstop.
When you're talking about, you know, comments, did it ever get to you, people saying you shouldn't do this or you can't do this? Because you sound so confident and headstrong that I wish, in a way, I wish we were all like you, because then we'd be much more confident in the choices that we made. That's what I kind of get from you, that you're like, yes, I've done control crying. Yes, I've done this. Yes, I chose to stop at 6 months. And you seem how we all should be, like, this is my decision and it's not right or wrong and it's my decision and that's that.
I think I had confidence of what I was trying to achieve and my knowledge based on my mum's knowledge. So when other people were giving me advice from a non-medical point of view, of course it got to me, especially when you've got your hormones raging and you have the hormones till well, you know, after breastfeeding, they don't leave you. And so, and it's not like I'm blaming the hormones, but that does make it trickier, doesn't it? Because I was a little bit more sensitive during that time. It was tricky, but I, because of that confidence in my mum and what I would always go to her going, look, this person is telling me this. And she goes, look, they will tell you this. That's life. You're going to always have to deal with unsolicited advice. But you, as long as you feel comfortable with what you're doing the right thing. She just always said, trust your gut. And I'm so glad she said that to me because, you know, when I was 37 weeks or 38 weeks, no, it was 39 weeks with Rafi. I couldn't feel him moving. And I remember that. And I remember my mum saying, go with your instinct, go and get him checked out and all of that. And it, you know, turned into an emergency C-section situation. But
oh, wow. So based off your gut, you went in. Do you mind me asking about
I couldn't feel him moving. And he was a really wriggly baby. And I just suddenly, and I'm really, was really active and running around after a three-year-old. So you don't really notice in a way. But I sat down and I thought, I can't, and I kept prodding my stomach and then he'd kind of move. So I called my mom and she said, well, sit down, have a cup of tea, have something sweet, like a, you know, Kit Kat or something. I'd heard her give other people that advice before because she said, you're so busy moving around. Sometimes you put them to sleep, you rock them to sleep. And that's why they're up at night. So she said, just have a sit down. And then if you're still unsure, just go and get him checked out. And then I went to the hospital and went and just got myself on a monitor. Didn't take a single thing with me because had no expectation that I wouldn't be coming back home. And they could feel a heartbeat. So they were kind of okay about it. And then they kind of went, hang on a minute, it's a bit irregular. This doesn't seem right. We need to take you down to the labor ward. And as soon as they said labor ward, I was so upset because I had been planning for a home birth, which my doctor was a bit horrified to hear, actually. But I had been because my first birth had been an induction. And I really wanted a water birth. I knew I wanted a water birth. I've always relaxed in a hot bath or a shower. And I knew that would be a good pain relief for me. And the first birth was an induction. I've never gone into labor. And I was quite upset about that, that I didn't have control. And I blamed that in a way, rightly or wrongly. And I, you know, that's why she didn't latch, because the oxytocin thing.
Yeah.
She didn't latch because I never went through labor. I had to be induced. And I felt that ruined the first 3 weeks and my experience with her. So I had gone for hypnobirthing. I'd planned for a home birth. We'd bought the tarpaulin to like put around the house. And I knew that if I, in an emergency situation, I'd end up at a hospital. I also knew I had a midwife mum, so I wasn't so worried about everything. And it was actually quite nice planning for a home birth because the midwife visits were at home, which made life easier and all of that. But, you know, as soon as she said labor ward, I kind of got a bit upset because I just thought, I do not want intervention this time. You know, I really, really wanted everything to be quite holistic. You know, I'm a woman that has done yoga since the age of 10. So I've been doing it for 30 years. You know, I really come from that kind of holistic approach. My mum is a aromatherapist. She was one of the first reflex zone therapists in this country, baby massage. Like, I really come from that background where I kind of don't like intervention if it can be avoided. So to go from that for someone going, well, you need to go to the labor ward. And I looked at the consultant, and then the consultant asked me, she said, I need to break your waters. And I went, no. And she said, why not? I said, because if I break my water, you break my waters, I have to give birth today. And I don't want intervention and I don't want a C-section. And then she looked at me and she goes, well, that's up to you, but I need to figure out what's going on. And then I looked at her and I said, well, tell me straight. And I don't know if you want to hear this, Ashley, actually.
I do want to hear.
I said, tell me straight, why do I need to have a C-section if you break my waters and something happens? So I said, she goes, let's do it one step at a time. Can I break your waters? I went, okay. She broke my water and I'm shaking. I'm physically shaking, that fight or flight response. I can see it happening. And the hypnobirthing, I knew about it. I knew that had happened the first time around, that my body had gone into spasms. even though my mind was fine, my body basically was just reacting to everything. So everything had shut down in that induction. And that's why I'd ended up having to have an epidural, because my body would not relax in that situation. And the same was happening again. And so you're sort of getting flashbacks. No one's there. My mum isn't there. My husband's on the tube trying to get to the hospital. And she broke my waters and there was meconium. And we all know when there's meconium, the baby's in distress. And she goes, baby's pooed. We need to get him out. And I went, what, as a C-section? And I went, tell me straight, what do I need to do? And she, because this is who I am, and this is why I don't want this, because of this. And she went, if I don't take your baby out in the next 20 minutes, he'll die. And I went, right, wow. Let me sign the form. And I knew, and that was so good. She knew me. It turned out she was actually the friend of my cousin, but I didn't know that at the time, you know. But it was so, because I was straight with her and I said, tell me straight, she told me straight. And I'm not sure she'd have done that with most people, but I said, I need the absolute truth. And suddenly a whole sense of calm went. And I think the hypnobirthing probably kicked in then. I was really, really calm. Phoned my husband saying, this is going to happen without you here. Don't worry. I'd actually chosen a hospital that my mum had used to work with, because my doctor had said to me, you need to be someone. With the NHS as busy as it is, you need to be someone or someone's daughter. And at this hospital, you'll be your mother's daughter. You need to go there. So I chose a different hospital because we'd moved house. And I'm so glad he'd given me that advice, because one of my mum's best mates in nursing was on duty that day. She'd just finished her shift. She came into the operating theatre and she said to me, I'm going to be your mum, because your mum's not going to make it. Your husband's not going to make it. No one's going to make this birth. I'm going to be the mum. Turns out the trainee anaesthetist I'd been to school with. So as I was signing the paper, it's like, Sonali. So it was it turned into a really comical situation after someone just telling me this. And it was really funny in the end. But yeah, he was so underweight. He was just above incubator weight, which was a bit worrying. He looked like a little rat. And I got someone to take a photo. You're not meant to, I don't think. But I basically got the guy I used to go to school with to take this photo and sent it to my husband on the tube. And all I wrote was Rafi with an X. And I didn't realize that would send him into a panic, because he's like, are you all right? Is he all right? What's going on? And like, I'd sent him into a tiz without thinking, he won't know what's going on. Why did I do that? And yeah, and then my mum came in. She parked where she wasn't meant to be. So she was getting upset about getting a parking ticket. And I'm like, Mum, I've just given birth on my own. Don't worry about your parking ticket. I'll pay the 35 quid. Do you want to go and check the baby's okay?
This needs to be a sitcom.
It was like a sitcom. My mum is that mum. She's absolutely, you know, when she said to me in the NCT situation, Beta, that's for people who need friends. I'm your friend. She's so funny, because she just, you know, she's just that comical Asian mum, I tell you. So yeah, that was my experience. It's just a bit weird, but I think the hypnobirthing probably helped me get through a C-section, which is kind of, you know, as they say, it preps you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome to Paranormal Activity with me, Yvette Fielding, a brand new podcast bringing together people's real ghost, extraterrestrial and paranormal stories, as well as getting some inside details from those who study the supernatural. be listening through your paranormal stories every week and try to understand them, as well as chatting about my own encounters with an occasional paranormal investigator too. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts from, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Acast. Just search for Paranormal Activity with Yvette Fielding.
To be fair, I didn't do NCT. Actually, my reasons was because I was still rebelling about, I don't want mum friends. I don't want to be like that. I don't need my only common ground with people to be having a baby, which in some respect is still true. Of course, you don't want the only thing that you have in common with people to be a baby. But I also feel like maybe I didn't find even one or two people that I clicked with that were going through what I was going at the same time. But
I think you're right. Like, I'm pleased I didn't do it. And my brother's really close to all their, and my brother and his wife are really, really close to all the NCT people, and they take their kids to classes. And it works for some couples so, so well. But for me, I'm a bit of a loner. And actually, when the baby slept, I either wanted to sleep or work or watch TV or pump, you know. So I kind of didn't want the pressure of having to go for coffees with people. I just didn't want that.
I sometimes think I wish I had done it. Actually, we moved house, so even if I had have done it, I would still have moved away. And that's kind of like my only comfort with it. But most of my friends who have done it they did find like their people. And
but I tell you where it really matters is what's lovely now is I have a whole new set of mum and dad friends because their kids go to school with my kids. And I think that's where it feels like a longer term relationship, because your kid will be in primary school for a lot longer than they will be at a nursery or NCT. So what I would, and maybe it's different for me, I've got a lot of cousins. You know, my mom is one of eight, my dad is one of four. Like, we've got a lot of family around us. And so they have a lot of cousins to play with outside of school. So I also, again, didn't need NCT friends. But you do build parent friendships once the kids are at school. And those are lovely friendships.
Yeah, I am. I mean, that seems like a very long way off for me. Obviously, Alf's almost a year. I would quite like to make some friends, especially now Alf's getting to that age where he really needs to play. And yeah, I mean, he's got his one cousin, although they live on the other side of London, but it makes such a difference.
So when is he in nursery yet? Because I'm definitely still in touch with some of the parents that my kids went to nursery with.
And that's another funny story from this week. So I decided I would ring up a couple of nurseries just to see what the situation was.
Are you going to say waiting list?
Yeah, so classic Ashley, like everything last minute. I mentioned before, like routine, structure, it stresses me out. I never plan anything. So I have an amazing nanny at the moment that comes for 5 hours twice a week, which is when I try and get all my work done. So at the moment, it's not very sustainable.
Gosh, what are you, superwoman?
Honestly, it's a lot. It's really, it's a lot.
I'm always like just behind with everything. And it's hard because
I think
feel
you need
like
more
I'm
hours
never...
from this nanny.
Yeah, so this is kind of where I'm what I'm working on, knowing that I need to be able to, basically I need to be able to work more hours because it's not sustainable at the moment, especially when I'm not really sleeping as well. So I rang a nursery just to inquire, and they said, oh, so when are you thinking of him starting? And I thought, oh, I won't push it. I won't go straight away. So I was like, oh, not till January. And they were like, oh, well, the waiting list is October 2022.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you mean January 2023?
Yeah, and I was like, what? And they were like, I genuinely thought, so if you're listening to this and you're thinking about nursery, even if you don't know yet, just
put their name down before they're born.
Put their name down, because I was like, but what am I going to do until then?
Okay, that's where NCT friends may have been useful.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you are pregnant and listening to this, everyone I know who's done NCT has really enjoyed it, and has, even if it's like one friend or three friends or six friends, they have.
I don't think you can go wrong with
a couple of people. Whereas I feel like you're really lucky that
You've
got your mum with knowledge,
situation.
And you've got like what sounds like you've got so much family around you.
My gosh, yeah. There's not enough time to see all the members of the family in a year. That's how much family we have. No, honestly, you're absolutely right. I think it's better to do it. And then if you don't click with people, you'll find other ways of making friends rather than not doing it. But I moved house as well. So that was my secondary reason, that not just my mum. It's like, well, they'll be in the wrong area because I moved when I was 8 months pregnant. So
yeah, and I think, you know, that's another thing that even, you know, like I mentioned earlier, my thing was like, oh, I don't want mum friends, or I don't want our only common ground to be kids. And it's like, Well, that's all very well, but I do think I was quite naive to be like, I'm not going to be like the other mums when you were literally entering a permanent state of motherhood. And actually, you might quite like to have the company of some of the other mums.
Well, I actually find that permanent state actually really hard. Like, I actually half joked a few weeks ago about how if we got divorced, we'd have the kids every other weekend. Because, you know, I know it sounds horrible, and I promise I'm not that horrible, but it is relentless, isn't it? And the thing is, I know we're lucky to be able to have kids, and there's so many people who can't have kids and all of that, and you sound horribly unappreciative sometimes, but the reality is that relentlessness is actually really, really hard.
It's so hard. It's the most permanent thing, because also, even if you love your job, which I do, I get to have a break from it. You get to reset, you get to recharge, whereas having a baby, which I'm still realizing, having children, there is no break from it, because even if they're not here, you're still having to think about their food, their clothes. Are they like, they are,
oh my
totally
god, you wait till the school emails. It's a full-time job just answering school emails and WhatsApp group messages, honestly.
At the moment, I'm dreaming of the school days. Like, what? They get to leave for a whole entire day?
Yeah, nursery is a game changer. There are certain milestones, like when you get to the sleeping through the night and whenever, and that has so different, for, you know, it can happen at, you know, 4 months, it can happen at 4 years and anything in between. It is a game changer. And the thing is, you feel exhausted right now, but your body will get you through it. And you, when you are ready to adjust stuff sleep-wise and you're speaking to the right people, your body will force you into a situation where, you know, with Ariana, I think the reason she slept so early on through the night is because my body was so exhausted, I didn't wake up when she was crying. And she was in the cot next to me. And I don't think I woke up, because I remember my husband saying, did you not hear her crying? And I went, no. And he just said, you were so exhausted. And then she put herself back to sleep. So I accidentally cried with her, because she's learned to self-soothe. I mean, she was a thumb sucker, which really, really helped, because it was like, you know, she had this hands-on dummy herself. It was hard to get rid of that thumb, but that's
what
really
sucker. So I know, I can only imagine the challenges. I actually didn't stop sucking my thumb till I was 13.
Yeah, and I think everyone kept saying that to me. Oh, you better get her to stop. She'll have to have braces. I said, if she needs braces, it's fine. Because actually, it meant she self-soothed from the age of 4 months. That's a dream.
And do you know what? It's interesting, because if Alpha, if we ever try and put him down in his cot, or he's sleeping in his pram and we leave him in there, if I'm asleep on the bed, so I say if I decide to have a nap, I will not wake up when he cries. But when he's in the bed with me, I am aware of every single movement. And it's interesting, because there must be that sort of like built-in instinct.
You're hyper aware. Yeah,
if he's next to me, I miss nothing.
And that's exhausting. And that's, I mean, it's amazing, because, but that, you know, there must be something in it for you. You know, you've chosen the co-sleeping.
Oh, I love co-sleeping. And also it's nice because, I mean, he knows where my boobs are now, so sometimes I don't even need to wake up.
Yeah, well, that's it. They're like little animals, aren't they? And they crawl up to you. I did try the co-sleeping with Rafi because I was so exhausted. I asked some advice, and someone said, well, maybe you should try co-sleeping. The same midwife that my mom's best mate, who helped me with the breastfeeding with Ariana, she showed me how to co-sleep when Rafi was maybe like 2-3 months. And she said, why don't you try this? It just didn't work out. He refused the dummy. I wouldn't settle. It just didn't work for us. But it's worked for so many of my friends.
Yeah,
it just didn't work for us. I tried it and it just didn't work. He just wasn't interested. I think he was just better in a cot next to me. That's all.
And also sometimes when I think, okay, you know, I would love to have a good night's sleep. I dream of the day that I can sleep with a duvet over me again, especially in winter. But then I think, oh, but it's a bit sad for me that the moment we like start the process of moving him, that's it. Like no more nighttime cuddles.
Well, there'll be child number two though, so.
Oh God, I feel like I still need to.
And they do want you at night sometimes, you know, they'll cry out for you in the middle of the night and you'll go and have a cuddle, and then that will put them straight to bed, and they will, it's all still there. But as you say, yeah, I had a habit of wishing the day away, but as they say, you know, the days are long, but the years are short. And you do look back with this fondness of kind of what you went through and what you went through together. And it is, you'll never regret what you're doing, will you?
I do have fondness, but I'm also still, I think, still trying to come
adjust to all the changes and the permanence of motherhood that the thought of having another one still, I'm like, absolutely not.
No, and I was absolutely the same. So many of my friends had them close together because they were like, get it out the way. But they had a different kind of maternity leave situation. Whereas I knew I couldn't do back-to-back babies because, you know, in my industry, I might as well be dead. And so I wanted a proper gap. And I thought, well, 3 years in my head, that would be a good gap. And I only really had Rafi for Ariana. Like, I'm really honest about that. I'm having you a second child so that she's not a loner. It wasn't for me because I really would have been happy after to stop after one. You know, back in the day, I wanted three until I realized how hard it is. And also the studies say three are the hardest. So you either go for two or four, apparently.
One other question I did want to chat to you about before I know time is so precious. So before I let you go is you're very private online about your family and your kids. And obviously I'm totally the opposite. I always joke to Tommy that one day Alf will sue me because of how much of his life I've put online. What was your decision, or what is your decision with privacy and family?
I just wasn't sure of the consequences, really. And, you know, when Crime Watch was on BBC One in the evenings, I used to host that. And I think I was always kind of aware that I'm kind of doing certain shows where maybe I need to be a bit careful about my private life. But it's more, I just didn't know the consequences of it. I'm certainly not private about what my kids say or do. It's just, you'll see the back of my head. It's more about their faces, really. But, you know, if they say silly comments, I mean, sometimes people say to me, you've just exposed your kids for what they've said. And I said, no, you know what? They're part of who I am. I'm very much show that I am a mum on Instagram because that is such a huge part of my life that I can't not show. You know, I'd just be erasing most of my life if I didn't kind of include the kids in what I'm doing and what I'm showing. I'm not sure whether showing their face or not showing their face is the right. I just don't know. I don't think there is a right answer. You know, someone like Rochelle Humes, I noticed sort of switched around.
Yeah, I mean, it's personal preference, really.
It's such a personal thing, and I actually really like seeing other people's families on. So I always wonder whether I'm doing the right thing or not.
Well, see, I was one of those people. I feel like before you are a mum, you say lots of things like, "When I'm a mum, I will do this or I won't do this." And actually, the majority of things I said I would never do, like co-sleep. I never thought I'd be breastfeeding till a year. Like, there's so many things I didn't think, and one of them was I was like, "I will not be." one of those mums who always shows their kids online. But do you know what? Even before Alf was there, I'm an open book naturally. Like, if you see me in the street, if you see, you know, my friends, my family, Instagram is kind of just an extension of my kind of like open nature. And so
I think it would have been weird for you not to, in a way, because what we want from you and when we follow you and when we see all your stuff, it, as you say, If you kind of didn't have that part of your life on show, we'd be like, why? What's going on? That's
bizarre. And I guess when you get
we're gaining something from learning about your experience with Alfie.
And I think I enjoy it. And especially being a lockdown mum, I've actually had so much like community and comfort in
that's been your NCT.
It definitely has. Like, even now, you know, like, it's so nice to hear from. I've never ever felt a greater sisterhood than I have since becoming a mom. And I realize how much of my kind of like misogynistic views, as someone that thought there was a feminist, like thought themselves as a feminist and thinks themselves as a feminist, I had so many negative impressions of what being a mum was, like me always saying I don't want to be like one of those mums, and what is one of those mums? And I cringe at some of the stuff I said. Now
we're always learning. That's what's so great about you being honest, because you're right, I've not really had a negative experience about being a mum. I just feel like we've got each other's back, and there's loads of people who try to start these kind of debates, are breastfeeding or not, and it's like, it doesn't matter. Don't even have an opinion on it. Do what's right for you as a family. If someone asks for your opinion, give it. But we're just here to support each other because we know what each other's going through, and it's hard.
Right. Before I do let you go, I keep saying this, but every week I ask a question from one of my lovely listeners, and I've got one this week from Emily, and she got in touch via the email, which is askmumsthewordpod@gmail.com. And this one is quite scientific. It's also about periods. So if you don't want to answer it, I'm going to try and answer it. She says, "Hi, Ashley, I hope you're well. I absolutely love the podcast. I always look forward to your new one on a Monday. I'm almost 6 months postpartum. My baby is exclusively breastfeeding and I've had two periods so far. On the first day of both periods, my baby boy Benjamin has been inconsolable, and I assume this is to do with it being day one.
Is my period messing up my supply? I wondered if you wouldn't mind please covering any issues you found with feeding Alf when your period returned.
My understanding is, but because I only breastfed till 6 months, maybe it's a 6 month thing. My understanding was, is that you don't really have a period while you're breastfeeding.
See, I didn't have periods while I was breastfeeding until I had my COVID vaccines. And then I had two periods, one on vaccine one, one on vaccine two. Then I didn't have any again until I actually got COVID. And then when I started weaning, they slowly came back. So I think
Definitely a lot less. Exactly. That's the point. I mean, that's why people are surprised when they do conceive, because there used to be that myth that you can't conceive while you're breastfeeding, which is a myth. But yeah, you're generally, the thing about your period, I mean, my periods have changed since I've had kids. You know, it's like really, really heavy on day two now, like the whole period is on day two. So I feel like my body has completely changed and my periods have completely changed since having a baby. It's like so much has changed. But it could be that she's different, because your baby senses everything, don't they? Your baby senses everything. So you might smell different, and, you know, it's just a sensitivity thing, isn't it? That there's nothing you'll be able to do about it, but just be there for comfort if the baby needs you.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know anything about breastfeeding affecting flow in terms of infecting your milk supply. But then again,
I don't think there's anything. I think it's more you'll be feeling a bit, it depends on how you have your periods, but some people feel quite off, don't they, on day one?
Yeah,
or
and
two,
I suppose it, in the you need lead your oxytocin from milk.
Yeah, exactly. And there'll be different hormones, and then that might be unsettling for you and therefore might be unsettling for the baby. And in a way, it's kind of like, it's just part of the cycle that we have on a monthly basis. And, I would just say it's probably not something to worry about, because, you know, even if something's happened to your milk supply, I mean, just up your water. If something's happening, you could up your fenugreek and up your water. And I mean, the best thing is to go to a breastfeeding consultant and see if there's anything you can do, because if you feel like your hormones are affecting it, then there might be something you'll be able to do, knowing in anticipation of that week if your periods are coming back. But for most of us, periods didn't come back until after we stopped breastfeeding.
Oh, well, see, I was going to say, my advice is, where if you are exclusively breastfeeding, don't be shocked if your period does come back, because I was quite shocked. And then I started to look into, oh my goodness, is COVID affecting periods? But actually lots of people's do, because it could be that they're not feeding through the night anymore, or, you know, you've started, if they're 6 months,
exactly,
you might have started
weaning. Our periods
are
affected by so many factors. They're so intuitive. You know, if we're not eating right or we're not sleeping right, they're affected by everything, which is why fertility is such a huge factor. So there'll be a reason. And I always say to people, if you're worried, just talk to someone.
Yeah, I would say definitely reach out to a lactation consultant, even amazing people online. You know, I mentioned Stacey earlier. She's at Feed Eat Speak and she's brilliant. And she's been like a really good non-judgmental source of, well, just some knowledgeable person around breastfeeding. So I'd say definitely speak to her.
Yeah, someone who's going to provide you with a bit of comfort and knowledge, really, as well, and without judgment. That's the key.
I'm so grateful. Do you know what? I'm actually like blown away by like your confidence and how you speak and your like self-assurance.
I don't know. I think it's only because of my mum. I think it's not my confidence. It's my confidence in her. And I think that's why I feel like I am. It was so different from me to other people. And I wonder if other daughters of midwives have a similar experience. But it's just, I had a security blanket and I still do, you know. And that's where confidence comes from.
I think it's amazing. And even like, you know, you put so much, you can just hear how much faith and love you have for your mum. I think if my mum had been a midwife, I don't know if I would have listened to her still. Thank you so much. You've been a brilliant guest. And thank you to everyone listening.
Thank you for having me on. What an absolute joy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.